Welcome to Thinking Reimagined.
Thinking Reimagined is a unique platform for thoughts-provoking intergenerational dialogue
in a diverse and inclusive setting with a focus on impactful change
in the global workplace and community.
Our stakeholders' conversations aim to spark thought,
leadership,
curiosity,
engagement,
collaboration, and learning
amongst individuals, teams, and beyond.
Enjoy this episode. And subscribe to Thinking Reimagined on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, and other outlets. Hello, and welcome to Thinking Reimagined, changing the mindset for a better global society. Thank you to everyone joining us on our platforms on LinkedIn, Facebook, and YouTube. Today's topic is especially dear to me because I am a storyteller and I've always enjoyed storytelling, the emotions and the sensations that I derive from it, the oxytocin, of the endorphins, the serotonin. And I enjoy all forms of storytelling, whether it's through the arts, dance, music, commercials, believe it or not, reading a good book. I've lived on stories, and I recall even as a child, my grandparents telling stories, my parents in the classroom. So storytelling is so important. And as we all know, it really encompasses business as well. So thank you very much to everyone who is joining us today. And I'm especially pleased to have our guests today who are going to share with us their experiences and the impact of stories and the power of stories and why they do this for a living. So thank you to everyone who is joining us today. Our my co-host Nifemi should be joining us shortly. But whilst we wait for him to join us, perhaps I can just start by having, well, I think Nifemi is joining us right now. Perhaps I can start by just asking everyone to please introduce themselves, and hopefully Nifemi will be with us shortly. Should I start with Yinka is here. Hello, Yinka. Thank you for joining us. And of course, hello, Nifemi is there. Hello. Hello, Vanna.
Hello.
Hello, Nifemi. How are you, Nifemi, my dear co-host?
Good morning, everyone. And thank you for joining us on this edition of the podcast. Dr. Ama, it's good to see you as well.
It's wonderful to see you. And Nifemi tells stories professionally. You know, he's a newscaster. So this is very special to all of us because he uses his voice to deliver stories. So Nifemi, share with the others, why did you start using your voice as a storyteller?
Well, that's a long story. So let me tell you a story, tell the storytelling. But it started a long time ago when I was in school. And it actually started with poetry for me. So I used to be a performance poet, you know, recite poetry with African percussion, folklores, folktale, folk songs and stuff like that. And I remember one day I
think we have lost Nifemi. Hopefully the connectivity will be restored. Yinka, may I start with you? Tell us a little bit about yourself and why storytelling is so important to you. And I may want to remind everyone that this is really a discussion, so please feel free to join into the discussion.
Well, thank you all. Thank you all. I'm super, super honored to be on here again. And storytelling is I believe the paradigm shift that we all need. I'm Yinka Egoke, I'm Andy Egoke. I think that everything involves around all the problems and all the successes actually revolve around storytelling. It's about interpretation. So it is the problem starts from, but I thought you said this, I thought you meant this, right? The only way to really communicate a story is actually to get into a storytelling that resonates with the feeling, the emotion, and then not only do we remember it, it resonates and we align. So I'm Yinka Egoke, Andy Egoke to some. There's a story behind that. We may hear it if we have time. I have many hats. I'm CEO and co-founder of Africa Sustainable Trade, which actually one of the key pillars, the three pillars of Africa Sustainable Trade, the main pillar I'll go into just for time, is changing the narrative, ultimately changing the story of Africa. Africa has, like any other continent on the planet, has some pluses and some minuses. Unfortunately, the narrative we know is mostly negative, which then doesn't open up for communication, doesn't open up for trade. So it is our brainchild. It is our brainchild to storytell Africa with the right narrative. My other hand is I'm an entrepreneur. I'm working on an app for ethnically diverse skin. So it's my belief that if we see each other as global and if we see each other as part of each other, then we truly understand that the old construct of tribe mentality is where we're meant to live properly. So we're not going to be harming each other, we're going to be enhancing each other. And my overall hat is actually communication. So storytelling is vital in everything I do, whether it's social or digital comms, to strategies, to PR, to media. Storytelling is at the form of everything, because if I can understand you, then you can understand me. And that's what I do for my clients. Dr. Amar, you're on mute.
Much. I muted because Sherlock the dog was telling his own story. And so I wanted to just keep it private. Everybody's communicating, which is what storytelling is, isn't it? It's what causes us to engage with one another. Verena, thank you so much for joining us again. The last time you were here, we talked about the good girl syndrome. And here we are today telling another story. Do share a bit about yourself and why this is a powerful medium for you.
Thank you, Amma. I'm absolutely delighted to be here with you again. I am a classical Indian dancer and a certified leadership coach. So I work with leaders to develop their stage presence so that they can deliver their story and their message with that deep, authentic authority that feels very easeful in the body and restful and is inviting rather than pushing. So my sense of story is very embodied. It's very sensory, but it also, if I think back, you know, I think we've already had reference to childhood, that sort of first growing up with stories. And that was very much the case for me growing up as a child. I grew up with stories from all over the world, from, you know, from Greece, from Japan, from India, from Africa, from Europe, I had a very rich, childhood in that sense, and I'm very, very grateful for that. One of the things I've been thinking about a lot recently, and I'm sure this is the case for all of us here, is the global story. Inka, you've already referenced that, right? It's, so how are we shaping the global story? Because in the last few years, the reality is in flux right now, and it's up to us to mold it. And the way that the stories that we tell will mold the reality that we're stepping into, I think, for the next century or so. So this is a very powerful moment for us to be having this conversation. So for me, there are two sort of key aspects. One is vocabulary. What is the kind of language that we use? Because it's the language that creates the interpretation and meaning and shared meaning. But the other is the body. You know, so I, because I'm a dancer, I always come back to the body. What's the sensation in the body? How are we using movement in particular to create another layer of meaning within the story? So if I use hand gestures or move my eyes in a particular way or generate a particular energy from my core and project that, that brings a different kind of sense, not just for me as the storyteller, but for the receiver as well, for the audience. So that's all of that whole sort of, you know, that drawing also on the mythic layer of reality that we're all tapped into is something that I'm very excited about. And I love to share all of that with clients because, you know, everybody has this. You know, I think a lot of people go around thinking, oh, well, I don't have access to the mythic layer of reality. I'm just leading a very ordinary, mundane life. You are not. You're just as much this mystical being as anybody else, and you can, it's very easy to pull those threads into your daily reality.
Well, you know, I have to agree with you, is by the engagement, that's what really comes through with a story. You know, a good story is engaging, a good story connects the teller of the story with the audience, and it's through that that all of the senses are awakened, and then the emotions come through. And we know that the brain is built for storytelling. It's the reason why we remember stories, you know, and can remember it years and decades later, like, oh, I remember that story, or I remember that R date. Is the delivery, you know, and that's what you're speaking of, is the delivery as well. Let's turn to Peter, please join the conversation, because I know you're a thespian as well, and you know, your mediums are quite extensive. You know, you started in dance. Do share.
Okay. Hello, everyone. I'm Peter Amanboyo. I'm an actor, director, filmmaker, and I wear a lot of hats, like Yinka said. But I think for me, storytelling, I've always told stories before I even knew what storytelling was. Because as a child, I had this wild imagination. I've often said this in interviews that growing up, I used to watch Alice in Wonderland. And you know how she goes into this imaginary world? So I used to sit in front of the TV and find out how to go into the TV. I used to look on the back, not the flat screen TVs, but the ones. I used to look for the, and I would spend hours and hours trying to find out how to get into the TV. But moving forward to now, I think storytelling for me has so many aspects, because it's a powerful human communication tool, so to speak. We have storytelling for entertainment, for you know, that feel good feeling when you entertain, and we also have storytelling to convey like complex ideas. You know, you simplify something that's going on in the world to a simplistic, engaging way, so your audience can understand and remember and engage, and with thereby create emotional, would I say, connections with the story, and you connect with your audience. So storytelling has so many aspects. I don't know how to put everything in one sentence, but to me, I'm a storyteller. And I was thinking about this podcast, and I came up with this thing about acting, because I'm also in front and behind of the camera. I write scripts, I create stories. So acting is behaving truthfully under imaginary circumstances. That's what I just thought about. And I was like, yeah, that is storytelling. So it has so many, should I say, what's that word I'm looking for? My brain is doing like 10 things. Yes. Sometimes I talk faster than I think, so and then there's, I don't want to just take everything and put together, but there's building trust. When you tell a story truthfully or to the right context, you're building trust with your audience, because you're telling, if you do a biography, for instance, you're telling a story about someone, you're giving the true identity to that story, as opposed to like the tabloids or whatever. People trust your story, so that integrity is there. If you're telling a story like a news, because storytelling has so many aspects, like a newscaster, you're telling a story about what's going on now, like the Gaza war or something. There's certain channels that you trust their storytelling, and then there's certain channels, you know, it's sensationalism. So it has so many aspects. Okay, I think I'm talking too much, but yeah.
Well, Nifemi just came back and Nifemi was speaking earlier. Nifemi, do you want to continue with your story? Because we're here to tell stories and connect with the audience and connect with ourselves, you know?
Absolutely. I apologize. I think my network is terrible today. You asked about how I started telling story professionally. I've never really, well, now that you're calling me a storyteller, maybe that's exactly what I do in the real sense of it. But I was also sharing with you how I started with performance poetry. And then there was this friend of mine in school who, you know, wanted to work with the community radio station and asked that I help write a proposal. So we had gone to this station together. And when the head of station saw the proposal, he said, "This is fantastic. You should come and, you know, start the second day or something." I was like, "For real?" And then I told the man, I said, "I have a proposal too." He said, "Oh, I like the way you said proposal. You should also be on air next week." And that was how, you know, I started on radio. And then it just dawned on me that with mass media, you have the privilege of reaching more people than just, you know, being in a town hall story. So I think that beyond the techniques of storytelling, because we've seen it, you know, improve over the years, I think what Peter Amanboyo was saying earlier is that the authenticity of the story is what determines whether the audience will believe you or not. So there are people who are known for, if the intent is wrong, then the technique is not going to do any magic after all. Or what determines whether your story will sell, maybe a business or, you know, a platform or whatever it is that you want to push out, I think it boils down to the truth, you know, component of what you're saying and what you're known for over the time is very critical. I work in a media channel that is, you know, loosely known for something. Or, you know, the ownership, the pattern of its storytelling is known for something. And I've seen how over the years that kind of affects the believability, if there's a word like that, of the story you're telling. So it's important that as much as I want us to explore the techniques of storytelling, I think that before you tell a story, it's not just how fantastic it is or how sweet it is to the ears. What you are saying, the content of what you are saying, has to have that appeal of truth and sincerity. And if that is not there, I think it just totally, you know, it totally ruins everything.
You know, I hope it makes sense. No, it does, Nifemi, because really, as storytellers, we're all storytellers. Yes, we have a concept and we sort of backward map with what is the end product? What do we want the audience to receive at the end of it? And that's how we go backwards to make sure if our thoughts and our plan and the characterization that we've taken and the language, because language is so important, then matches the end of the delivery, because it needs to be that connection. That connection is important. Otherwise, you're not going to be believed. So the end product is as important as the process to get to that delivery of content. I absolutely agree with you. And I think it's the reason why sometimes when you see performance, you see them and the technique is there and they're going on and on, but there's no connection. And so they lose the audience because they haven't connected with the audience and it's just empty. And at the end of it, you're left saying, well, I suppose I'm going to applaud because you've taken the time to come up to deliver, but you didn't connect with me. The content did not match the audience. But you're absolutely correct. We're all telling stories every day, as Verna said. We're all telling stories. It's how we connect those stories to the person that is receiving it that is most critical. And the medium that we use must be appealing to those that are on the other end. Otherwise, it's a lot of words running, but no authenticity. And that comes through in your movement and in your appeal and in your presence, you know. And it has to be authentic. I have to agree with all of you. that the authenticity is very critical. We buy products because of the story in how the brand is presented, the commercial. You know, we go to a dance performance because we have a feeling that we're going to connect with that dancer. I mean, very often when I go to dance performances, I literally leave there stiff, you know, because I've been moving along with the performance because of that engagement and connection. Yes, I have to agree with you. Yes.
I think also there's a piece here that I'm thinking about, which is around the deeper intention or the impact of storytelling. So even if we go back before the whole idea of marketing was even unleashed on the world for good or bad, because we all know it can be used to market. You can use the same strategies to market anything. Whether they are positive or negative, they have positive or negative impact, and that for me is a huge problem in today's world. And you mentioned mass media. I think that you know that problem is just proliferating. So this is where I like to go back to, if we go back in our minds to the history of storytelling and the purpose of storytelling on a global scale. There is in the very act of telling and sharing and speaking stories, of performing stories, there is a transformation that happens in the group that's present. So in that sense, story is ritual, or has the, in a very ancient kind of sense, there's on a human level, story is ritual, and there is deep power in that transformation that happens in the group of people who witnesses the story, simply by virtue of participating in a shared story. So in one way, one thing I've noticed, and if we think about sort of the great tales, like the great mythology, and of course, coming from an Indian background, we have stories and myth and legend of all kinds and of all varieties. And I think one of the powers of tapping into that level of mythic story is that each individual is able to then see themselves within that story. Do you see what I mean? So it's, we were talking a lot about performance, and it's making me think, Yinka, when you, and also Peter, when you were speaking, I was thinking of this whole notion of the mask and how actually there is truth in the mask. Right, there is truth in, so whatever myth it is that we are sharing, we're actually on a ritual level, we're opening a space for the audience to see themselves in that mythic space and actually and experience a transformation in real time. And for me, that's possibly one of the most powerful aspects of story. Yes, but I'd love to know, Yinka, what you have to say about that.
Okay.
Yeah, my words. I love these words. I love authentic, because everything I start to do, I think, what's one word for it? So African sustainable trade, we're thinking, what's the one word, right? And then we build out of that. And African sustainable trade, I think, collaboration. Now you start working out, how do you collaborate? It means that the message I'm putting out to everybody has got to be as A, authentic, right? And B, relatable to everybody, even though you're all gonna be receiving it from your own frame of reference. You're gonna be receiving it from how you feel, how you feel I'm communicating it. So, and I also love transformation. One of my hats is transformation coach. And let me share a story. So I'm sitting on the train, all right, and minding my business, trying to meditate on the train, and there are these kids running about the train, running up and down, rockers, pulling out papers, everybody, you can feel everyone is, right? And everyone's looking at the father and thinking, come on, but in typical British fashion, nobody says anything. It goes on. So I'm at my wit's end now. So I say, excuse me, I don't mean to be rude. I have kids. I know what it's like. I don't mean to tell you what to do here, but could you take control of your kids? Right? They're really causing a ruckus. And he sort of looks up and says, oh, I'm so sorry. Yeah. we've just come back from the hospital and my wife just died. And I suppose the kids don't know how to take it. And to be honest, I don't know either. So I'm completely, you know, lost. Now, this is a story, okay? But I use it a lot in transformation because what it depicts is the paradigm shift, right? So one of my favorite sayings is seek first to understand. So before I need you to understand me, let me understand you, because then we make the connection, right? So it's transformation. Why it's paradigm shift is that you feel, even in the story, everyone is a wit's end with this guy. Everyone is thinking, what a bad father, what kind of person are you? Your kids are going to grow up, all this lovely stuff, right? However, as soon as you hear his truth, his authenticity of, oh my God, my wife just died, you do 180. I like to say 360 because you almost do 180 and you're like, oh. And all of a sudden, from wanting to murder this guy, you all of a sudden feel, oh my God, can I help? Can I give you a hug? Can I take the kids? Can I? And I think that that's the power of storytelling. You know, as transformation coach, I'm always saying that we have this innate ability as individuals, the 7.5 billion plus of us on the planet. We are not meant to be looking out to be like somebody else. We're meant to find our inherent strength. And how do we find that? It's by being authentic. And I say that even if you have bad news to deliver, as long as you're being authentic, people will respect it and hear it, ergo feel it and connect with you, right? So the power of storytelling, you know, when I'm talking about coaching, I think that everybody wants to connect the dots forward, but we can't really. We just don't know what it's going to look like, okay? I can do all the planning for this podcast and say, okay, right, I'm going to say this, and this is what it's going to work out, and, you know, research everybody and all that lovely stuff. But the truth is, when it comes to delivery, if I'm not authentic, it won't come out, it won't connect. So the only way we can really do that is looking forward and saying, A, how do I be authentic? And I love the notion of that our vocabulary is important. So when I'm coaching, I say that the number one thing that stops us from being our best selves is fear, right? Now, what is fear? It's false evidence appearing real. And the fear is built on doubt, doubting, can I do it? So if we peel back in stories and understand that fear is based on doubt, and how do I overcome doubt? Let me learn. Let me understand. Let me go and research. We've got wonderful tools today in the digital world that we can go on Google and YouTube and all sorts of tools for us to learn stuff. As soon as we eradicate the doubt, then we also, of course, the fear disappears because we've now learned how to. So It's an honor to be amongst, you know, a thespian, a dancer, a broadcaster, and the wonderful Dr. Amaze, where all forms of communication, because that is what is going to change the world. The narrative we're running right now is based on a story. I go back to 50 plus years ago with Martin Luther King's speech, and he didn't say, I have a plan. He said, I have a dream. And 50 plus years, we still can resonate with his voice. And I have a dream. And it wasn't a concrete plan. It was a dream. And that's based on a story of what I think the world could look like. Storytelling. Love it.
And I hope the audience is enjoying it as well, because that is storytelling. That's what we're doing all the day. Except some people, as you said, are very fearful of sharing their stories because they think they're going to be put down, or they're not enough, they're not adequate, no one's going to listen. But the reality is, if you share your story, you could inspire somebody else. You can share your story, you could have impact on somebody else's life. But that authenticity and that willingness to come out and say, this is my story, or this is what I was thinking about, or this is what I dreamed for, or my vision is very critical. And I think that's how we're going to change, transform, to use Werner's word, the way things go from where we are now into the near future, into tomorrow, because, you know, we don't know what's coming. But if we can be authentic and use the language that engages, that collaborates, that includes everyone, that's participatory. And that is how storytelling began. Let's be honest. Now we have things in digital form, but storytelling in India, in Africa, wherever it was verbal. It was verbal, was using your voice to convey information that you believed will carry on historically, that will impact, that would teach, and people would learn from it. So it's a medium that we need to hold on to and amplify much more than it is right now. I interrupted somebody, or did it, was somebody trying to speak?
Tapping from what everyone was saying, because I had so many thoughts, but they've all been conveyed. But just to add to that, besides the formal storytelling, once upon a time, blah, 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 there's also the informal. And like Vena mentioned and Yinka mentioned, body language is a very strong informal storyteller. We tell stories every single day, every single minute with our body language. Picture this, you're in a room and somebody walks in all confident and all dressed up, and you make in your head, you make a story about that person. What you perceive that person's story to be, we all do it. It doesn't mean it's true, but we have that story from what they're giving us. They're feeding us a story, and from their body language, we're making up that story. As Yinka said, guys, kids were running around, you know, cussing and ruckus, but it was the exact opposite because he just lost his wife. So in our minds, we're like, oh, this guy, take care of your kids, their brats, blah, 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 you know, but it's a story. And then when you're dancing, like Werner does the, improvisation, you're dancing, interpretation, you're telling a story. Children tell stories every day. I am a cat. Is that a cat or a snake? I'm a cat, I'm a dog. All kinds of informal storytelling. You sit on the subway and someone does like this. There's a story there. They don't, either they're racist or they don't want to touch you, or that person might be sick. They might be scared of people. So you have to know what story they're telling. Doesn't mean because they do like this, they hate you. It might be their story that we're trying to perceive. So I'm just thinking of that informal storytelling that we see every single, I'm talking in my head, that we see every single day. Looking at the faces now, I can see Dr. Amma is smiling. So she's happy, she's smiling. Werner is listening intently. Yinka is smiling. It's like, okay, this guy's got a lot of brain work. You know, I'm telling different story. It doesn't mean it's true. He might be smiling and say, this guy's talking a lot of crap. But to me, he's smiling. Oh, he's very intelligent. I like him. You know, so our stories and people perceive it, or let's say our audience perceives it in whatever way they think. Might not be the case, but it's just an informal storytelling.
Fantastic. I just wanted to add that, you know, storytelling can be so good that it becomes too good. But one of the reasons why I decided for broadcast journalism is that the part of a story that is not told is like the part of an object that is not reached by light. So I think it was Mr. Peter who said earlier about following the Israel-Palestine, you know, war. The platform you watch determines what you know about the story. It feeds your sentiment and even your behavior. You know, just yesterday, there was a student, I think in, maybe it was in Europe or America, who was threatening to kill Christians, you know, because of what's happening in Gaza. And if you trace it back, you can trace it back to the platform from which he's getting his news from, you know. And I think it was, you know, Vena who talked about how storytelling can be used for good and bad. So you want to, you're selling a product, for instance, and then you're telling a fantastic story of how good the product is, but you're not telling us the complete story of what the side effects are, or those people who shouldn't use it, or maybe some some people shouldn't even touch it at all. I just want to ask a question. Do you think that, you know, as fantastic as storytelling is as a technique, do you think that we have gotten to that point where we demand the complete version of a story? Because what we see on social media, for instance, speaks to what I'm talking about, the fact that people project a part of them that they want to sell to you, but it doesn't necessarily mean that that's the complete version. And there's a lot of deception that is also ongoing when you see how storytelling is being used to manipulate the market, for instance, manipulate a people and, you know, get you to act or decide in a way or the other. How do you think that can be checked? How do you think, what do you think must be done to demand a complete version, so to speak?
This is the Thinking Reimagined podcast, sponsored by Allied Empowerment. Allied Empowerment Consultancy offers leadership and innovation through bespoke human development solutions, brain-based leadership, and coaching. Allied Empowerment empowers business leaders, teams, and individuals to intentionally accentuate desired outcomes built on trust, curiosity, psychological safety, engagement, and communication. Allied Empowerment, thriving in a sustainable and valued manner.
Oh gosh, I love that. May I jump in quickly? Because I love that question. I used to be, my first company was in publishing, just back in 99. And in those days, the internet was just coming about. So we were still one to many, i.e. you're in media, you write the story and you translate to many, right? Then the internet came, and then our lovely social media came, and it became many to many, because now everybody is a broadcaster. Everybody has a story, and it depends on how many followers you have, and it depends on how good a storyteller you are, right? Your message is being perceived. And in one aspect, I thought that was great, because now we're all inclusive and we can all have our story told, until even the social media platforms understood that actually this can be hijacked. And we've seen it happen in many political campaigns, and as Nifemi is saying as well, even in the general things, in the global things that are going on. So how do we ensure that we're, A, from our perspective, communicating the right message? There's a tricky question. There's no real one answer to it, in that everything we actually communicate out, so if we look at communication on basic levels, is in outbound, right? Right now, outbound, you guys are receiving, so inbound. Here's the challenge. Everything that's inbound for me at the moment is from my frame of reference, it's from my experience set, it's from what I've done, it's from my belief system. Authenticity is important, because being authentic means that you deliver your message. Like I said, it could be sweet or sour, people will still respect it as long as it's authentic. Donald Trump, may not love him, but one thing we can all agree on is that he communicated authentically, right? Now, how do we get, or how do we ensure that what we're receiving is the real perspective? Now, unfortunately, the onus is on us. So I do something called double research. So if I want to purchase something, or I hear a doctrine that I think that's interesting, I look at what the pro are saying and I look at what the negatives are saying. Because that way, you know, because we're in a state flux that the world is moving so quickly, and we receive information. Sometimes we're receiving information we don't even know we're receiving it. So sometimes I'm very careful of what rooms or what I'm listening to. I don't have a TV for that aspect, because I just don't want to keep hearing the crisis, the crisis, the crisis, because internally that's doing something as well, right? It's shaping your frame of reference to the world. And as we know, the world really is how we are internally. If we're having a good day, the world is great. Doesn't matter if we're having a lovely British weather that's cold and rainy. And if you're having a bad day, it could be sunny and everything's amazing, but the world looks terrible. So I think ultimately one answer is that the onus is on us to educate ourselves. And I use, like I said, the double metric. No matter how convinced I am the feeling of something, I would always look at what are the people pro it saying. So if I want, you know, to try a new painkiller or a new drug or whatever it is, a new product, what do the people pro it say, and what do the negatives say? And it's not also based on value, because you may have more people saying negative things about it. We know that every new invention breeds fear. When the mobile phone came out, everyone got worried, oh my God, it's sending waves to us. But now most of us even have multiple mobile phones. I think the part of the piece is to look at both sides.
Yeah, and I
also to just take something for face value. Sorry, Vanna, carry on.
No, that's okay. Just to follow on from that, I think that there are different there are different contexts, right, in which we tell stories. So for me as a broadcaster, you know, you're in a particular role and there's a particular responsibility in that role, in the way that you deliver a story. So to go to the essence of your question, which was about the complete story, I would actually say there's no such thing as the complete story, right? Because almost every experience, yes, we can agree on certain things for sure. I'm not saying there are no facts, because there are certain things that we can observe that occur. But as soon as you then start to interpret, and as soon as you then start to talk about how people feel about things, now we're in the realm of interpretation, and it's a whole different level. In the context of social media and who is telling the story, because of course, as you said, everybody is now a broadcaster, we're all telling stories. So, which is why in my work as a coach, I'm particularly keen to work with leaders who are making themselves available to uplifting human consciousness and creating greater coherence at a global level. Because if you're coming from that standpoint, if your intention is to create an auspicious atmosphere around you and to generate harmony and coherence rather than chaos, now that's going to be able to guide the way in which you tell your story. Yeah, so this is why, again, tapping into the whole idea of the great myths and the mythic stories and how those, you know, these kind of big ideas can come through, but with a lot of space around them. So you're then able to decide, which role do I want to inhabit? You know, how do I want to position myself? And there's a word in Sanskrit drama for the person who introduces the story. And the name for that he's not really a character. He's called the Sutra Dhara. Sutra means thread. And Dhara is one who holds. So he holds that central thread around which many, many things are woven. So that's something I always bring my coachees back into, is what's the central thread? Where is your geometry in the body? Because within your body, your spine is that central thread that holds everything. And if you actually come into that space of the back body and the spine, particularly in the lower spine and your core, now you're creating coherence within your system. And in terms of receiving information, you're now able to receive through a filter of coherence and symmetry. And then when we generate stories from that space of being this holder of a central thread around which coherence can form, now I think we're in a position to tell stories that uplift human consciousness and tell them in a way that uplifts human consciousness.
Go ahead.
Okay, I just want to give a quick example. This happened to me about 15 minutes before this podcast. I saw this video on Instagram and it says Matthew Perry of Hollywood died at 54. And then the video started going back. 5 years ago, he looked like this and he looked like this. And the story was about how good he looked and how bad he looked now. And I was like, Matthew Perry, we all know Matthew Perry from Friends, right? Dead. So what I did, I quickly went to CNN and BBC and, you know, the trusted media, and found out it was true that he was really dead. So I think from an audience point of view, we have that responsibility to research and go to the trusted medium to know if the story is true and get the full story. This happened just 10 minutes before this podcast. So I'm just thinking, trust is very important. If you're telling the story, if your audience trusts you, then that story can be a short version or the full version, but trust is what I'm trying to emphasize here. Sorry, Dr.
No, there's no need for apologies, a discussion, so we're just talking. The word that comes across to me is value. What is the value of the story? You know, what is it that, what value is it conveying to you? What are you getting out of it? Because if it's valueless and it has nothing to add to your life or what you're experiencing at that moment or could experience, then you really shouldn't spend much time on it. But if it adds value and influences you or inspires you or relaxes you or excites you, you know, all of those emotions, as we mentioned, and feelings are very important. But what is the value of the story? And like everybody here, I'm very particular about what I allow into my consciousness, because I want to operate from a place of consciousness, of being with myself. I always say, if you know yourself, then you know what is valuable to you. And at that moment, you can relate to the information, because storytelling is information that's been delivered to you in one form or the other. So value is the key word for me, is what is the value of the information, of the exchange that you're experiencing. And if it holds no value, then you should not spend any time on it. But if it's giving you something of meaning, of value, that you can add to your life, to your experience, because life is about experiences, and it's in those experiences that we tell stories, then by all means, pay attention to it. But to the degree that you pay attention to it is what matters, because I agree with Verna, there are no true stories. I mean, there are no full stories, but there are true, authentic stories. And it's those stories that carry on long after a person moves away from that scenario or that place. It's what people hold on to at the end of the day. Yeah.
Absolutely. By the way, we have a Nollywood director. If we had Benna, maybe we have Bollywood represented here as well. But I just ask that, you know, I love to see movies a lot. You know, and I'm finding out that just like what you said, Dr. Amma, there are movies you will see that will add tremendous value to you. There are documentaries that, I mean, when you're done after an hour and a half, it will be as if you've just read like a 600 page book. But Peter Amadboyo, perhaps you can enlighten us, because we've seen Nollywood, you know, tremendously evolve over the years. It used to be, you know, I mean, it used to be the same narrative of how your village but that's changed now. What kind of stories do you think we should be telling, you know, at this time of and I'm particular about Nigeria, you know, perhaps you can extend it to the continent as well. What kind of stories do you think we should be using the movie industry to tell in such a way that will not only benefit the industry but also advance the nation and the continent?
Okay, you used that word value. So value is relative to your audience. What might be valuable to you might not be valuable to someone else. Do you know that the biggest type of movies are those movies which you call the village movies and the disappearing and the native doctors and all that? That is what people value, and that is what they want to see. So that is what sells. That is their value. To someone who's more, I wouldn't say more intellectual, but intellectually inclined, you want to see movies about global issues and things like that. That is your value. So it depends on the market, that you're looking at. Okay, take Z-World, for instance. For all of us that have seen Z-World, we know it's the most ridiculous, crazy stories, but that's what the audience wants, even though they know it's ridiculous, but it taps into that, their value, that Z-World is one of the biggest things right now in Africa and the world, because that is what that value brings to the audience. So we can't really say this type of, today it could be drama, tomorrow it could be romance, tomorrow it could be action or mystery suspense, but it depends on your market. In Nollywood, your biggest market is those Asaba movies, because that's on a daily basis. When I say Asaba movies, I'm not trying to bring anybody down or anything, but that is what sells the most. You have a cinema movie, it's in the movie for 1 week and it's gone. But those movies on Africa Magic is there 24 hours a day. You watch part one, part two, part three, part four, part five. Then the next movie, the same actors doing the same thing, but a different story. That is what sells for them. So you go to a movie theater, you watch Yinka Oyegoke and Dr. Alma and Vena doing global things, and they have their niche, they have their audience. It's in the cinema, so that is the value for that audience. So you can't really measure, it depends on what your market is selling. But the biggest market right now is those movies which we call ridiculous. That's because those people are always at home watching 24/7. Z-World, if you watch it, it's ridiculous, but it's big.
You have used the word ridiculous like 10 times. I'm sure Vena doesn't have it.
We know what we're talking about. You're trying to.
I don't even know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Vena, do you watch Z World?
I don't. No, I don't.
I don't even know what it is.
You don't know what it is. Oh my God.
I must be missing out. I'm sure I feel like I'm missing out on something really big.
You have to watch it because it's big.
Oh, really?
It's those movies where two people are trying to find each other for 3 years, and they come, and as soon as they're trying to see each other, a car goes by and they walk by, and then something happens. Someone is listening and nobody can see them, but it's in the same room listening. It's just ridiculous, but that's what people love.
So that is providing entertainment also, value. I've never seen that.
So the value is in whatever you're conveying.
Interesting.
I think that we really have reached the power of storytelling here, because I have no idea, but I'm engaging with you just on Peter Armand's energy of him describing this. I've engaged, and I'm going to research now. I'm going to watch.
I knew it was going to come alive with a Nollywood angle. Fantastic.
One more thing. You see, when take Nollywood, for instance, you have these movies that are badly done, and then when it's done very well, like in the cinemas, or like what we do, the high production, they're like, oh, we're trying to copy Hollywood, it looks fake. Meanwhile, it's a step, 10 steps higher than what they want. But when you give them the crap special effects, they enjoy that, but they criticize. So how do you win? You just have to keep going.
Yeah.
All right. As we drive this home, I just want to hear from, you know, all of you, and let's help someone who's watching who needs to improve the storytelling technique to, you know, build trust and rapport with their audience on their business. As a matter of fact, it's the biggest highlight if you want to grow your numbers on social media. And I also see it happen a lot when I do more of them Twitter these days. It's now called X. And I find out that when I'm telling stories about, you know, the economy, telling stories about the value of Naira, yeah, you know, some considerable engagement. But the moment I start sharing personal stories. Oh, I was at a wedding over the weekend, and then I'm having a conversation with the groom, how you have now moved into, you know, the husbands of Lagos Club. I mean, the engagement just goes, you know, to the next level. So help us understand, how do you create memorable and, you know, shareable content? How do you, you know, use storytelling to increase loyalty and engagement on your business and, you know, practically drive sales and conversations in this regard? Who's going first?
I can go first. I love this question. So I'll tell my story that I often share about how I started as a coach. And it goes back to 2004, 2005. I was in a marriage. I'd fallen in love with a wonderful man at university, and we got married. And we started to grow apart and grow apart and grow apart. And I struggled throughout 2023. I really, really struggled because I wanted to stay in that marriage and I wanted it to work and for it to be beautiful. But my soul was slowly dying. And I remember it was probably around this time of year, actually, in 2004, that I'd got to this point where I realized that if I stayed in the marriage 10 years down the line, I would have completely lost myself and lost any connection to my own truth and to my own soul. So I was at this point, I was at this fork in the road, and I had to make that decision. So I did. I made the decision to complete the marriage. Notice the language, the vocabulary I'm using there. I made the decision to complete the marriage and get a divorce. And that was this moment that I came home to myself in a completely new way. I started a new chapter in my life. It was an incredible roller coaster. It was very painful. And it was the moment of my freedom, in which my freedom was born. And so when I'm working with coaching people, the thing that I'm always looking for is, how can I help you find your own freedom, your own voice, your greater expression in this moment? Okay, so that's the end of the story. So can you see that the reason why it's so engaging, why is it so engaging? It's because people are interested in people.
Yes.
And as I'm telling my story, all of you are not actually hearing my story. You're hearing your own story. Mm. And that's why it works.
Fantastic. Yeah. Very captivating. Thank you for sharing, Veda.
My pleasure.
Yeah, that was thank you for sharing that, Verna. I'm interested in a lot. I'm also interested in the fact that when you're choosing, because I think as a coach, what people don't understand is that you have to choose your clients. Your clients come to you, but you also have to choose who you want to work with. And I think that that's the state that we need to get into to ultimately create change. For me, when I think about stories, and I think that let me use Africa Sustainable Trade, because it's the obvious narrative. We set up Africa Sustainable Trade because for the last 5 to 6 years, we've been talking about sustainability globally. All right. But Africa is never brought into that conversation, very simply. Right. So what will happen is that we will end up following the trail and trying to use the same socioeconomic development the rest of the world to fit Africa. When, if you actually peel back, one of our, like I said in the beginning, one of our three pillars is to change the narrative, all right? Now, if we peel back to the narrative of Africa, if we think of biodiversity richness, right? We think about the ecosystem, we think about variety of wildlife, we think of all the species. We all know that exists in Africa. Now, that is part of sustainability, that actually we're no longer in a what happens there doesn't affect me, so I can ignore it, because we know COVID, as we're told, we don't know fact or opinion, but as we're told, was birthed in Wuhan, China, affected us globally. So we're no longer in a position to say what is happening in Israel and Gaza doesn't affect me, so I can just shy away. Actually, we're all part of it. So when we talk about sustainability, the word sustainable is actually to to be able to, and another word you, when you say complete, right, is for us to be complete, is for us to be sustainable, right? So the narrative that we're changing is that when you think of Africa, we forget the wildlife, we forget the ecosystem, we forget that the renewable energy potential, right? We forget that the global emissions, I think for the UK, are something about 3.8%. The global emissions of Africa are about 3%. Africa is 54, 55 countries, right? So when we think about storytelling and we think about authenticity and we think about collaboration and we think that we are one world, I think that it's important that we're able to tell that story, that narrative, to really depict as much as, and I agree completely with Werner, that there is no true story. There is no true complete story. It's different versions. But that's why we need diversity. That's why it's no longer a tick word. That's why inclusion is so important, because everybody here is adding to that wonderful tapestry of our stories. And the more I hear of Peter's excitement, I'm now gonna go back and add to mine. Like, I want part of that, as opposed to me trying to compete with Peter. Actually, you have something that I'm really interested in. I'm gonna add that to my tapestry and my experience. I'm gonna earn Werner's, I'm gonna add Doctor, I'm gonna add all of these things into me to allow me to not be ever be complete, but ultimately continue and experience this life. So I want to end by asking all of you to join Africa Sustainable Trade, because it needs your help in storytelling. It needs your help in conveying the message, which we're already changing the narrative. Thank you.
Okay, nice one. I just want to touch the social media question real quick. I think not every story is for every medium. The story you tell on X, Twitter, is different from what you tell on LinkedIn. It's different from what you tell on Instagram. So if you're telling one story the same way on all mediums, you're going to have different reactions and different engagements. If you're talking about Africa sustainability, trade, LinkedIn is more of your niche. Instagram would look at it, they would like it or engage it, but they would not move on because they'd say, oh, okay, it's Africa sustainability. And then when it's on LinkedIn, you have more people who have that mindset and will say, yes, let's engage. Let's see what this is about. Let's do this. So it depends on how you tell your story to different mediums. But now if you say Dr. Amar and Yinka on Africa Sustainable Trade are fighting, now Twitter would love that. Or Instagram would love that. The same narrative, but different ways of telling the story. So you get what I mean, right? And then also I want to bring this real quick. Was it 2021 we were in London, Dr. Amar? Yeah, we were stuck in London during the COVID. And she left to America and I was still in London. And I was stuck in a room for a few weeks. And all I could hear was COVID. 1 in 26 people have COVID. Everybody's dying, blah, blah, blah. I had to change my flight, because there was a hospital next door and the ambulance. So I started hearing screams in my sleep, in my dream, everything. And then I changed my flight to come back to Nigeria. And I got to Nigeria, nobody's wearing face masks. Nobody cares about COVID. They're like, there's no COVID, it's just... So that my brain was like, I'm just coming from a place where everybody's dying, 1 in 26 people are dying. And I'm here and people are like, there's nothing like COVID. So same story, different narratives, different audience. So what am I trying to say? It just depends on who's hearing the story and what medium we're hearing the story in. Storytelling, we could go on for months talking about this, but that's my take. Thank you.
I just want to say quickly that I'm very suspicious of you, Peter Armand, because last week, Dr. Armand, we had a strategy talk in terms of Africa Sustainable Trade, in terms of our outreach and communication. And we said exactly that, that actually we're going to look at what we're putting and we're not at the point now to put on the images that work for Instagram. So we are going to put more resources to LinkedIn and those things. So I'm concerned that, you know, you're involved in our strategy talk. But I also want to add that, you know, there's a beautiful saying that I can't remember who says this, but he says that the dog bit Peter, or Peter bit the dog. Same words. Yes. But completely different meaning, especially if you're Peter, right? So, absolutely. The art of communication and storytelling is, you know, you use the same set of words, they have completely different meaning. And also it's that paradigm shift. You're in the UK and it's, oh my God, we are, you know, DEFCON 1, we're all about to go, right? And then you get into Nigeria and everyone's like, COVID, what is that? Oh, come on, don't be silly. And it all depends on the environment. Ultimately, the environment will always win. So as storytellers, let's do our best to create the best environment, because the environment always wins. And if we're putting out negativity, then it somehow is going to make us believe that is our future, which
let me add something real quick. I was looking at Vena's profile on Instagram, and she had two. One says PhD and the other one says dancer. So I chose the dancer one because it was like, you know, and Dr. Arm was like, can you please use the other one? So it was the PhD one. So it was two.
Brilliant. Yeah, absolutely. Two different aspects of myself, which I have to say I experience very much as one, but it does people's heads in when I say, yes, I have a PhD and yes, I'm a dancer, or I say, yes, I have a PhD in philosophy and dance. It's yeah, you get really interesting responses. They're not quite sure which box to put you in.
And that in itself is a beautiful story, that they don't know which box to put you in, because if they can put you in a box, then they can relate to you in a manner that is commiserate with what they're thinking or their story about you. And I live with that quite a bit, because when people say, tell me what you do, and I look at them and I say, I'm about people and opportunities at the right timing. Well, what does that mean? And then I now go into this litany of all the companies, you know, what each one does, to show them that it is about people and opportunities. And really what we do is, as human beings, we're interconnected. And it's those stories that bring that connection together. And through that connection, we can influence and we can educate, we can entertain, we can add value to our lives independently and collectively. And so I know that storytelling is going to go on long after we're all here, but it's the value, it's the substance, the content that really matters. And what that does for each person is going to be determined by their experience at that moment in time when the information is coming to them. But hopefully long after, they can go back to it and ascertain some other value or relevance to their lives. Nifemi, this has been an incredible conversation. I wish we could go on much longer. We really must bring them back, mustn't we?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes. I want to say a big thank you to everyone. I mean, you spoke from your heart. I'm intrigued, and I'm sure that everyone who's joined online or who will be listening to this later will definitely consider this very valuable. You now know that Vena Ramphal has PhD in philosophy and dance, and that she's a classical Indian dancer turned leadership coach. Vena, thank you for joining us on this podcast today.
Right. Absolute pleasure.
Mr. Yinka Oyegoke, entrepreneur, sustainable trade advocate, communications expert, and coach with more than 22 years experience. From the conversation, you can tell that he's co-founder of the Africa Sustainable Trade. Thank you for sharing with us on this episode.
Thank you very much. Thank you. I'm honored again to be here.
And Peter Aman Boyo, please do not bite the dog. And actor, filmmaker, art director, co-producer of Thinking Reimagined podcast. Thank you for all you do, Uncle B.
Thank you very much for having me. And one more thing, storytelling is history.
Absolutely. Yes, Dr. Ama, entrepreneur, educationist, behavioral consultant, resilience coach. She's the mediator and past chairperson of the British Business Group Nigeria and currently chairs Africa Sustainable Trade, which she co-founds. Well, this is all our brainchild. So when she was talking about the many companies she chairs, the Thinking Reimagined company is one of them. Dr. Ama, we love you and we are grateful for all that you do. Thank you, everyone, for joining this podcast. I'm Nifemi Ogutoye. We'll see you again next week.
This has been a Thinking Reimagined podcast.
The executive producer is Dr. Ama. Co-producer Peter Ammon Boyle.
The podcast is edited by Nelken and it is moderated by Nifemi Oguntoye.
Thinking Reimagined emphasizes the importance of transformational conversations which have as their aim the bringing about of the rich diversity of thoughts and, most importantly, powerful and applicable effective solutions and change.
The views, opinions, and contributions of the panelists are exclusively theirs and do not reflect the opinions of Thinking Reimagined producers or personnel. Thank you for listening,
and we hope you have enjoyed this episode.
We invite you to subscribe to Thinking Reimagined on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, and other outlets.
We look forward to presenting another riveting episode next week.
Thinking Reimagined podcast is produced by Live Abundantly.
We welcome your thoughts and invite you to visit our website, livesabundantly.com.
Or you can follow us on social media on Live Abundantly 8.
Thinking Reimagined, changing the mindset for a better global society.